Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Beltway Blitz coming up. We're covering the NBA, the NFL, and the Nationals, who have called up Brady House. We'll get a deep dive into Brady House with the play-by-play voice of the AAA team he's been playing on, the Rochester Red Wings. Josh Wetzel's going to be with us. He was on the bus with the Red Wings when we tracked him down earlier today to try to set this up. So he's making the rounds in the minor leagues with the players. Appreciate Keith Smith, Benjamin Brown, Josh Wetzel, all coming up on this Beltway Blitz on Grant and Danny.
We are exclusively sponsored by the law firm of Condori and Morad. Estate planning, elder law, real estate transactions, probate administration, the whole kit and caboodle. Their attorneys are always there to protect you and your family's assets. Schedule a free consultation with their team today by visiting kmlawyers.com and be sure to let them know that we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com.
Let's get to the Blitz and go to the hardwood. Keith Smith of SpotTrack joins us. NBA Finals Game 5 tonight. Keith, I was joking with Danny earlier, and I said the Oklahoma City Thunder are up 2-2 in this series. That's kind of what it feels like, doesn't it?
Yeah, a little bit. I would give the Pacers a little bit more credit for the Game 3 win, but yeah, that's not a bad way to put it.
Who wins tonight and why?
I think it'll be the Thunder. I think they're going to get a lift from the home crowd. I think they figured some stuff out to really slow the Pacers' offense down. We'll see if it's called any tighter or not. But I think the Thunder are going to get it done tonight. I picked Thunder in six before the series. I still feel pretty good about that. But it wouldn't shock me at all if Indiana, you know, pulled out another win or two here and took home the title themselves. It's been a really great finals.
Maybe the fourth quarter of their game was the difference. But seeing SGA finish like he did, man. For him to put them on his back and for them to basically go 2-1 in points down the stretch, what did they find there?
Yeah, the big thing that they were able to do was go to the Jalen Williams SGA two-man game, and they worked it with SGA as a screener, which then forced the switch, and then Williams gave it over to him, and he went to work against Aaron Esmith over and over and over again. Those two have rarely screened for each other throughout the course of the playoffs. In the fourth quarter alone, they ran seven screen plays between the two of them. So they found something that worked, and they bled it. And I would expect to see that start. Now the Pacers will have a counter developed for it, but we'll see that. That's likely to be something we see again here in Game 5.
Yeah, Keith, going to that, what do you expect Indiana to do differently here tonight?
Yeah, I think you're going to see them maybe try to amp up the pace a little bit. They slowed down too much in the fourth quarter of that game. That's not how they play. That's not how they get it done. So we'll. I think you'll see them play a little bit faster. I think you're going to see them, maybe kind of go with their main guys even more minutes. Try to push them well up over 40 minutes and see if those guys can take you home with a lead for Game 6.
Are you surprised that Mathurin wasn't a bigger factor there in Game 4?
A little bit. He is very, hit or miss. He
Mercurial,
has these games where he looks like one of the best players in the league, and then he has these other games where all of a sudden it's like, is he even out there? What's going on with him? So, yeah, it's just that consistency that he's missing in his game.
If the Thunder do win tonight, I believe they're 9.5-point home favorites, would you view this thing as over in six, or do you give the Pacers a chance to get another one and push it to seven?
Yeah, I think they have a chance. I think they're a pretty good home team. We've seen the Thunder at moments in these playoffs have a little bit of struggles of their own, especially on the offensive end of the floor when it's time to close games out. So I would give the Pacers still a pretty good shot of forcing a Game 7, even if they lose tonight.
Keith, while I got you, I want to pick your brain about this. One of my worst abilities, and I have a lot of things that I'm bad at, but I can never accurately predict trade value. I'll never know what somebody's worth in any sport, pretty much cutting across. Were you surprised by the haul that Desmond Bane got?
A little bit, but I think when you actually dig into it a little bit deeper, you can see Orlando really only kind of traded a couple of picks that are even sort of questionable, and those are those later picks in 28 and 30. The pick they traded this year, they had two. They still have one, so they feel pretty good about that. The one next year is an extra pick that they had. from previous deals, so that goes. And then Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, you probably give up at least one pick to get off of his contract as well, because that's just not a great deal. So when you factor it all in, it looks like, all right, yeah, it looks like a whole lot. But when you break it down that way, you start to be like, okay, that makes a lot more sense.
Should teams now pick up the phone on Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson? I mean, is this open season at this point?
Yeah, not on Jackson. The Grizzlies have been very clear. They have no intention of moving him in a trade. And part of what they're doing is creating flexibility to sign him to a max or near max extension, as provided they can get enough cap space to negotiate his salary up, for this coming season. So that's where they're headed with that. Ja Morant, maybe a little bit more available, but it feels like they are pretty much in a place where they're going to move forward with those two guys and build out the roster around them and try to build it up that way with a lot of depth around those two guys versus trying to run with like a big three with Bane. It seems like that was their plan in this deal by moving Bane, was to create that flexibility to build a roster around Morant and Jackson.
Keith, thank you, buddy. Really appreciate the time.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
You got it, buddy. Hit that NFL sounder, please. Our pal Benjamin Brown via The Score joins us to talk about the National Football League. But it turns out all it took was a whole lot of money and a contract offer. Sounds like Hendrickson and the Bengals are making nice, huh?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we still need some official news on that sort of status. But yeah, I think, you know, the flexibility with which the Bengals kind of needed to get to from a contract standpoint makes sense. Obviously, Hendrickson needs to get paid. But yeah, until the ink is officially dried, I'm still a little hesitant to declare this one completely over. At this point, I know Jeremy Fowler kind of came out with some news earlier over the weekend, but this still seems to be a somewhat fluid situation, I would say, from things I'm hearing, both the inside and the outside.
Ben, what's your expectation for J.J. McCarthy this year, and what do you make of the Vikings kind of handing him the keys to a Ferrari?
Yeah, I mean, I obviously think, you know, you want to get the answer to, you know, the rookie quarterback or, you know, young quarterback as quickly as possible, you know, pending backup plan with Sam Howell and et cetera happening. I do think it was the correct decision. Obviously, you know, when you have certain edges from an NFL team standpoint, you want to press those things as hard and as quickly as possible. To me, Kevin O'Connell does provide a certain amount of edge over other coordinators, play callers, and head coaches, and how to kind of get the most out of an NFL quarterback. And I do think going in that direction, building around J.J. McCarthy and figuring out exactly what they have was the correct and prudent decision. And I do think in a lot of ways it is kind of pressing on that particular edge. And I do think we do see teams not necessarily go in that sort of direction. So I do have to, you know, give kudos to the Minnesota Vikings and the organization and understanding where that edge lies and really pressing down on that and really trying to make the biggest impact with that sort of, you know, outlook and perspective that they kind of have at the quarterback position with what they can potentially get from Kevin O'Connell to kind of bring along, I would say, J.J. McCarthy into the best setting possible.
Ben, it depends on the book that you're looking at, but the 49ers are tied with the Lions and, you know, the second highest win total over under in the NFL. George Kittle said the expectations are lofty. I'm paraphrasing. I'm not quite sure I've got that confidence in the 49ers that it seems the industry does and maybe they do internally.
Yeah, I think it kind of relates to the, you know, the Kevin O'Connell, you know, discussion, but we have seen, Kyle Shanahan be very strong at, you know, not only developing quarterbacks, but coming up with the offensive system that a lot of guys can potentially benefit from and a lot of guys can be really productive in. And I think, you know, maximizing that it is something that the books have definitely gravitated towards for the past few seasons. And there is, of course, the narrative of, you know, the 49ers either losing 10 games every other season or ending up in the, you know, the NFC championship game as kind of the worst case scenario. So I do kind of get at least the betting market expectation for them to be good again. You know, to me, you know, outside of the, you know, what Brock Purdy brings, I do think, you know, Trent Williams being healthy and playing a full season is very much going to be, you know, kind of the litmus test for how good they actually are going to be. But I do think, you know, with Brandon Ayuk kind of needing to be that number one receiver, we did see flashes of Ricky Pearsall. I do think Juwan Jennings is pretty good as a third receiver, but if he kind of needs to be that secondary guy, that's when I really start to see the offense struggle. So outside of Brock Purdy, I do think Trent Williams is, you know, probably the most valuable non-quarterback that still needs to really perform for his team to be good. And I think that's really got to be the question for how how and where the 49ers kind of end up this season. If he stays healthy and is back and in the fold, I do think they're going to be, you know, a top eight sort of offense. And I do think in that sort of scenario, they could at least make a run at some of these teams in the NFC for sure.
Ben Brown on the National Football League. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, guys. Have a great show.
See you, bud.
All right, time to talk baseball. Nats have lost eight in a row. Rockies in town for four. Brady House making his debut. Boys are 2-11 this month. They got to get right. So let's get to it. And to give us some insight on Brady House's debut with the Nationals, Josh Wetzel, the AAA broadcaster for the Rochester Red Wings, joins us on the Beltway Blitz. Josh, are you surprised the Nats decided to call Brady House up now with the walls caving in at the big league level?
No, I'm not really surprised because he's been doing well. I think, it's probably just a matter of time. I think there's still a lot of work that he can do and a lot of areas he can improve upon just from my perspective. But I think that's probably kind of the exciting thing about Brady for the Nationals and Nationals fans is that, you know, he still has a lot of room for improvement, and yet he's putting together really good numbers, you know, batting 300. He's third or fourth in the league in home runs. He leads the league in hits. So even though, maybe there are areas he can still work on, the upside is really, really good with him.
So you mentioned he's got things he needs to work on. What are those?
Well, I think the number one thing is probably the chase rate. You know, he still chases pitches at a much higher than even AAA level. But having said that, you know, it hasn't impacted him too negatively in terms of the production he's had here in Rochester. And he hits the ball really hard. So I think, you know, earlier in the year, there was a brief period of time where he was maybe in a slight funk. And Brian Daboch, the Red Wings hitting coach, had him lower his hands a little bit. And that seemed to help him get back going again. And, you know, he's got a 15-game hitting streak right now. And yet, it's not like he's hitting 500 during the 15-game hitting streak. He's really been fairly consistent throughout the season and hasn't necessarily had any crazy hot streak, and yet he's hitting 300 with, again, 14 homers or whatever it is. And, I think the exciting thing is just the upside is there. And, you know, defensively, he can be very, very good, but, you know, maybe there are some moments where the focus lapses a little bit and he can make some errors. But I think there's still a lot of room for him to get better, both offensively and defensively. And as I said, I think that's something that Nats fans have to be pretty pumped about.
Josh Wetzel calls play-by-play for the AAA Rochester Red Wings. House's 300 average, 870 or so OPS, both really impressive. He's obviously doing a lot well. What has gone right at the plate?
I think, you know, the fun thing is these days we can go to Baseball Savant and you can search up stuff. You know, anybody can look it up. And see how they hit, for example, against certain pitches and pitches in certain parts of the strike zone. And last year, if you look at what he did in AAA in half a season, he kind of only hit the pitches kind of right down the middle. And I think he's been able to expand that and do damage in more areas of the strike zone now. He also is not chasing as much as he did a year ago. He's still chasing pitches outside the strike zone more than you would like, but not as much as a year ago. So I think that's been part of it. And he's hitting the ball hard. Most of the time when he hits it, he's hitting it really, really hard, which has resulted in obviously some good numbers. And, you know, he's had some breaks this year. He's gotten probably more infield hits and little bloop hits than you would maybe expect. So maybe the 300 batting average is a little bit deceiving in some ways. But, he's had a really, really good year. There's no question about it.
So do you agree with my take that he'd be an upgrade now defensively over Tenna? You were just talking about the glove. Let's grade his defensive performance this year.
I think he's probably, you know, it's come and gone a little bit. I think he's going to benefit having Nathaniel Lowe at first base if he makes an errant throw. I mean, Lowe's really good at scooping throws out of the dirt. There have been some errors this year on throws that were in the dirt when he made a good play to make a stop, and then the throw's in the dirt, and the first baseman doesn't dig it out, and Brady ends up with an error. So I think that's going to help him just having major league infielders around him. But the defense has come and gone. And talking to scouts, you know, there are some scouts I've talked to that have been a little disappointed in his defense this year. I think certainly he's capable of making terrific plays. And again, that's where I think the upside comes in too. I think there's still a lot of room for improvement on the defensive side because the raw skills are there for him to be, I think, a really, really good, well above average major league third baseman.
All right, Josh, so the big question then, let's just cut to it. mean, what are your expectations for him? How well will this go in his first cup of coffee here in the major leagues?
Ooh, man, I don't know if I'm the right guy to answer that. I mean, I hope he does really well. He's a good dude, and, you know, there's a ton of ability there. So I tell you what, I think he will swing and miss some at some pitches out of the strike zone. But it's also a misnomer that major league pitchers always make perfect pitches, right? So if they make mistakes, he's going to do damage. I mean, you don't want to throw a hanging breaking ball at the top of the strike zone to him, or he's going to crush it. You know, that's just what he's going to do. And so I hope that he's able to take advantage of mistakes. And I really think he's going to do okay. I think there will be some moments where he strikes out, and he might have some defensive lapses from time, but overall, I think you're going to see some good things. And the good thing is, I think by next year, I think then you'll see a much improved Brady House, because that's kind of what happened here. You know, he didn't play real well for the Red Wings last year, and then we've seen what he's done this season, which has been really, really good. So I think down the road, Brady House is going to be just fine.
Brady House debuting tonight over at Nats Park. Josh Wetzel's been calling his games at Rochester. Speaking of which, before we let you go, Cade Cavalli's on the brink of a call-up, possibly in early July. Also, some of the other reinforcements, guys that have been back and forth, are still down there with the Red Wings. Anybody else that might be able to help this team in the weeks ahead?
Yeah, Cade has had some really good starts and some where he hasn't pitched as well. You know, two starts ago he had a dominating five-inning performance against a Worcester team that has a terrific lineup, and at that point still had Roman Anthony in it. And then a couple of days ago, you know, he had a 37-pitch first inning and walked four guys in one inning. So it's been a little inconsistent. He still hasn't thrown more than about 80 pitches in a start, but the stuff has looked good, and the velocity has kind of come and gone a little bit. He's still throwing harder than your average major league starter, but it hasn't always been 97, 98. Now, two starts ago it was. He was averaging 97, 98 with his fastball, and the stuff was fantastic. So he's the one that, I guess, jumps to mind immediately. Dalen Lyle's going up, and Lyle can really hit. I know that the coaches here are huge fans of Dalen Lyle and the ability that he has. So those are probably the two primary names that jump out to me right now. And you know, Drew Millis is doing pretty well right now, too. Drew's been down here the entire season, hasn't maybe hit the way he would have hoped, but has been kind of coming around lately. And I think his defense has been really good lately. And that's another one. And talking to scouts, as I occasionally do, the scouts I've talked to have really thought that Drew Millis looks better defensively behind the plate even than he did a year ago. So Drew is another one I would keep in mind.
Good information from Josh Wetzel, play-by-play, AAA Rochester Red Wings. That's your Beltway Blitz. Next on Grant and Danny, the mayor of D.C. says the Commanders are upset with the city council.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
College World Series action today. There is a pitcher working on a no-hitter through eight innings for Arkansas, Gage Wood. And Gage Wood is a fringe first-round pick kind of coming into the CWS.
Maybe a little bit less fringe now?
Yeah, pitching his way up the board. But how cool is that on the biggest stage of your life on national TV?
How about that?
More people watching you pitch than ever in your life. Biggest game you're ever going to have as a, you know, amateur. And he goes out there, and he's now going into the ninth with the chance to throw a no-hitter. Pretty neat.
In an elimination game, no less. Win or go home. And he doesn't want to go home just yet. He has been unbelievable.
The Commanders might be upset at the city council, if you believe the words of the mayor of Washington, D.C., Muriel Bowser. I'm going to read from Pro Football Talk, Danny, and then want to see where you come in on this. The deal between the Commanders and D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser was the beginning, not the end. And the agreement to build a new Commander stadium in D.C. potentially could evaporate. This is from over the weekend. As explained earlier this week by Eric Fisher of Front Office Sports, the arrangement requires preliminary approval from the D.C. Council, which we know they've got this deadline for July 15th. At that point, the team can talk to other jurisdictions about building a stadium. So as of July 16th, 1 month from today, exactly 1 month through the day, the Commanders can go back to Maryland. The exclusive negotiating window that D.C. and Bowser secured was only through 1 month from now. Florio goes on to write, that would open the door for Maryland and Virginia to negotiate with the team. Quote, a delay sacrifices our exclusive seat at the table and $2.7 billion in private investment, Bowser said. The Commanders and my team are ready to iron out the details with the council and respond to any concerns. It should be clear. But let me emphasize, if the council strips the deal, terms, or budgeted dollars from the budget, it kills our agreement with the Commanders. The Commanders hope to open the stadium by 2030. Bowser, according to at least one report cited here, said the team is outraged by the situation. She also said, I think they feel blindsided by the discussion, and it's not even close to characterize their reaction as furious. So I guess it's a who's who, like, you know, go whichever way you want with the reporting. This is, you know, WTOP News. Could DC's deal for a new Commander Stadium be in jeopardy? And they're quoting her as saying that the team is outraged. Now, I have not heard any of that. I find that hard to believe. When I think of Josh Harris and Mitch Rales and these guys, I don't really think outrage. But I guess my question is all of this part of the negotiation and the posturing, or is this a problem? Like, is this actually not going well, or is everyone just doing what they're supposed to do?
Yeah, I think the answer is a little bit of both. Now, these are smart. You mentioned Harris, Rales and company, Ein, Magic Johnson, go down the list. The lobbyists, whose names we don't know, probably never will. These people are not stupid. They have been around the block. They understand how all this works. You hire somebody to do the advocacy work that they did to help win over Congress, win over the Senate, to get D.C. control of the land. Then you hire these same people to go about these jobs, to pull the strings, grease the wheels, and do everything that needs to be done in order to get the deal that you want. The idea that they'd be blindsided. They're taken aback. They're very, very furious at... No, they're not. They're fine. They understand. They know what this is. They know that there's bluster. They know that everybody's going to be, and they'll pass that up the chain. This is part of it is normal. That doesn't mean it's a slam dunk and a done deal. You see what I'm saying? Like, both are true. I guarantee you, if you gave Truth Serum to Josh Harris, Mitch Rales, and everybody in between, they'd be fully aware and understanding. Will it be nothing but smooth sailing and a unanimous vote and everyone's super excited about everything that you proposed? Of course not. We knew this is going to be a pain in the butt.
I want to clarify something really quickly that I just read from Pro Football Talk that looks like it's wrong because I'm looking at another quote here. It didn't make sense to me. So they quoted Bowser as saying the team is outraged and then also quoted her as saying it's not even close to characterize the reaction as furious. That's a Mendelsohn quote. So this is the back and forth here. Because when I read it, it didn't make sense. In response to the council's uncertainty, Bowser said the team is, quote, outraged. I think they feel blindsided by the discussion, end quote. Mendelsohn, who's on the other side of this, saying, I'm not telling you no. I'm not telling you we're not going to get a deal, but we're not doing this deal by July 16th, essentially. He says it's not even close to characterize their reaction as furious. So Bowser's saying they're livid. He's saying, I'm talking to them. They're not that mad. It's okay. Who do you believe here? I actually tend to believe Mendelsohn a little bit more, and I think Bowser maybe publicly is suggesting that they're... Now, are they happy? Probably not.
Right.
But outrage, that feels like you're walking into the city council and turning a desk over and screaming at people. I have a hard time believing they're that upset right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I think, and I'm not poking fun, I'm just trying to draw the comparison. I think Bowser was outraged when that press conference happened with Leontis and company, and then she went in and, like, flipped the table or whatever the hell it was, like, the next day.
She barged into Monumental Sports and basically said, let's talk.
Right.
The day after Ted was in Virginia to press her.
I think that was outrage. I think this is, she's doing what she's supposed to do, advocacy, trying to put the screws to the council, trying to exert the right pressure, using the political levers and the whole thing. So, again, I always go back to what happens on July 17th. 15th is the deadline. What about July 20th? If an agreement's reached, what about July 30th? What about
you mean not reached?
Yeah, or no, I'm saying if it's not reached on the 15th, but it is on the 18th.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
are we fine? Yeah. Or are we not fine?
Like, I'm sure we're fine then, but if it's not reached on the 15th, it's not being reached anytime soon.
you wouldn't think, but again, if the thought, if the talks are promising, not that what we hear about outrage and otherwise,
well, right
the
now,
big song and dances.
There seems to be no talks, by the way.
Well, they're sitting in a room debating something, elements of the budget
the
or otherwise.
The council is still debating those, but I'm saying the team and the council aren't talking, and the council, at least three of the members have told us, we need concessions, which means at some point they need to talk to the team. They can't even do that until they figure out what they're doing in their own budget.
Totally. I guess my point is there is a process that has to play out that we're looking at 1/1000th of this budget because it's the thing that we care about for our little sports show. But they're doing the whole process. And if they won't be rushed, they won't be rushed. Like if there's anything promising happening, if they're, you know, behind the scenes, again, the hired lobbyists and the advocates and the people that are doing this professionally, making so much money, it would make your ears bleed if you heard the number. They're sitting there plugged into the process, know exactly what's going on, are briefing the football team. Nobody's operating in the dark. It's not like you get a phone call at the end of the day going, yeah, they didn't discuss nothing. My source in the room says they're not talking about it. Everybody knows exactly what's going on.
But the problem is they're talking past each other because the council is viewing this mm-hmm. as an opening offer. Like, it's very, very different if Odyssey comes to Danny Ruye with a contract offer, and in their mind, they go, this is perfectly fair for you. This is your offer mm-hmm. that you're getting from us. And you go, that's not the worst first offer I've ever seen. I don't mind that. Now, I'm going to send you 10 changes with my agent to this contract offer. The money's going to be way higher. The vacation's going to look a lot different. You know, you go into all the specifics, right? That's what's happening right now. The team has made the offer that the mayor is telling them, this is the offer. It's not an offer. It's not a first offer. It's the offer. And then you got this quote from Mendelson, who's in charge of the city council, who said, the council will move forward quickly to analyze the mayor's terms, improve the deal where possible for taxpayers, and approve a new football stadium. Any suggestions to the contrary are simply false. So you could take that one of two ways. He's saying, I actually am positive about the fact, and I like the fact that he's saying the council will move forward quickly to approve a new football stadium. That's all in that sentence. But the middle part there is to change a lot of the things we don't like and give it approval. Well, that doesn't mean that the team will sign off on that deal. So I still think it's a game of chicken. Now, I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but the team really has not said anything publicly.
Right.
Is that interesting to you?
Very much so.
They had the press conference. They put the deal out there. The city council is doing interviews, answering questions. The mayor's been incredibly public. At one point, calling in on our listener line to the 800 number to talk when we were talking on the show that she overheard and talk to what we were speaking to on a segment. The team has, from a public standpoint, not to my knowledge, addressed this really other than one or two comments about how great the stadium will eventually be from Mark Ein when he was promoting his tennis event uh-huh. or what have you.
Yeah, and I think they realize they're in a good place in that regard. They've got a public advocate whose job is public. They don't need to do a whole lot. They don't need to do a lot of trumpeting.
Meaning because, the mayor's doing the work for
exactly.
them.
Exactly, and others. I mean, there are people that are championing this thing, right, on their behalf. They don't really have to do anything. When you have to go out and do it yourself, you get your own PR, and then you open yourself up for shots and whatever. If they just sit there silently, there's no obligation for them to kind of get the ball rolling.
But would it hurt for Harris to kind of play politics and go, door-to-door is not literal, but, go try to speak about this? I guess there's nothing to be...
I think it might, because there's nothing to be gained. Again, when you offer public comment on something like this, you open yourself up to whatever kind of scrutiny. So now a reporter can go, hey, how come you guys are paying a dollar in rent for the next 30 years instead of the market value of the ground?
But he could have a good answer for that.
Sure, but it's not as good as a no answer at all and never talking about it because you've got public advocates. To me, the best.
That's not exactly true because...
If he's got a counter. Right. But like to me, like there's you don't want to get... I don't want to get in those. I don't want to get in those like... arguing with advocates or one way or the other, et cetera. To me, this is you've got plenty of people in your corner. You've already made your views known. You're also giving away leverage potentially if you start saying it's got to be this, because you're going hell-bent and doing a campaign to try to make win over the hearts and minds of folks in D.C. That's really, at the end of the day, what's most important to me about this is if this takes an extra 2 months, 5 months, I don't know what the drop-dead point is. An extra year, they know Virginia's a non-starter, and it's still, to them, I think, so much better than the alternative. They're just going to deal with it, I think, because they have their heart set on this.
Let's open up the phones. 800-636-1067 is the number for you guys at 800-636-1067. The mayor is telling the city council the Commanders are outraged. The head of the city council says that's not true. They're not mad. And he's talking to them, too. First of all, how do you weigh in on that, and what do you think's more likely? But also, do you think any damage is getting done here? Is this just the negotiation? Like, posturing or problematic, maybe, is the better way to put it. Grant and Danny on the Fan.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
The D.C. Defenders won the UFL championship. Their MVP of the game, who threw for 4 touchdowns and about 400 yards, Jordan Ta'amu, is going to join us in less than 15 minutes. Right now, though, we're asking you about the chances of a stadium over at the RFK site. The mayor says the Commanders are outraged with the city council. The highest-ranking member of the council says that's not true, says that they're not angry, and the negotiation is ongoing. Andrew's in Warrington on G&D. What's up?
Hey, so as a policy wonk, this kind of screams to me that she's using the stadium as a bit of a bargaining chip rather to get the budget across the finish line rather than the actual stadium itself. So it doesn't feel the urgency isn't there for the stadium so much as we lost $1 billion that we normally get from the federal government and we need to make our budget make sense again. And so trying to push it, push using whatever lever she has, because she doesn't have much more to use. This is a big one. That's what it more feels like.
Appreciate you, dude. Yeah, I couldn't speak to that. I mean, you sound more informed than I am on kind of the larger macro issues, but in terms of using a carrot, stick, whatever you want to call it, I'm used to, this is what that sounds like to me. Right? Like the current state of play is one side has urgency, the other side's holding their hand up. It's like, imagine the umpire is like, do you want to challenge the play or not? And the manager's holding his hand up and he's looking at the guy who's on the phone. Right. And they're just looking at the replay and they're going to keep looking at the replay until they decide. And the manager and the umpire's going, we got to play. And the manager's going, I'll let you know. And at some point, there is a walk away point. There is for the team. I don't know when that is.
That's key. Here's what we know. Let's just look at what we know right now. What we know is, and stop me if you think any of this is not accurate, there's not going to be a deal before that July 15th deadline, which is less than a month away. Agree with that?
Yes, I do.
Okay, there will be no deal. I think we also know that the city council will not pass this deal as it's currently constructed. Is that too far?
That I don't know.
They're saying they're not going to pass it. And they don't have close to 7 votes right now. I mean, I think we're still stuck at 4 votes. They need 7.
I don't know if nobody's tippable in terms of, again, if you give me $50,000 for my library and you give me $31,000 or a future tax credit for this youth center, I have no idea on that kind of stuff.
So you're talking about outside of making changes to the stadium project.
Yeah.
They get, I guess if you want to look at it in a shady way, like their palms greased.
Sure, I mean, yeah, or...
But, you know, or in a positive
the normal
way,
politics stuff.
They get the stuff that they need to do, the good that they want to do.
And it could also be that, and again, this is something I don't know, because the mayor says in these comments, the Commanders and my team are ready to iron out the details with the council and respond to any concerns. So what if there's at the end of a couple hours, 1-800 football team, and you got Harris and Rails and whoever on the phone, and you go, here are our 4 concerns, and they go, oh, we can do this, this, and this. Okay, that's fine. Maybe that changes somebody's mind. Again, I have no idea. So I don't know that I necessarily 100% co-sign an absolute.
But I'm not saying they won't. I'm saying the current deal as constructed, and maybe this is wrong, but they're not going to accept that. That is what We have had people sitting in this studio on the council tell us. It's what we've had people on the phone tell us. They need seven of the council members to say, yes, we'll take the deal. And I still think they have four. And it's not like they had four when it first came out and they have five now. There are four of them sitting there that day. And unless there's someone who is pro the stadium who hasn't made it public, and there's no real benefit to that because the majority of D.C. wants it. You know, you're treated positively, not negatively, at this juncture.
If you come out and say so,
by and large, I mean, you'll get some angry emails from some of your constituents, I'm sure, either way. But to me, there's been no progress in the way of more yes votes. We're keeping track. It's still the tracker still sits at four.
Heard about for sure. But you're right. It's a good point, actually, that you would probably get credit if you came out in favor of it now because people seem to want it.
The big question is just the walk away point being the date, if that is, July 15th. How serious a deal breaker is getting it done before then? I don't think it is. I think that, the Commanders were hoping that they'd get the support as fast as possible. And so you set a date as a negotiation, so to speak. But I'm in a place right now where I think even when that date passes, and if, quote unquote, Maryland's back on the table, maybe you, for leverage sake, get Wes Moore back on the horn and you take more meetings, but you just keep hammering this thing out. They've shown their cards. They want to be in D.C.
They want it.
I think they feel like they need to be in D.C. It's not a matter of, Maryland's giving us a great offer. We're doing you guys a favor. I think they've shown it's D.C. or bust in a lot of ways for them. Let's go to Frank in Great Falls. What's up, man?
Hey, guys. I hear what you're saying. I take exception that there's any drop dead date because Virginia and Maryland, I don't think, are in the picture at all. I mean, if you look at what's happened to their budgets, if you've looked at what their likely political situation is over the next year and whatnot, this is not a tenable offer going to be put on the table from either of them. D.C. isn't not only what they need and want, it's, I think, their only option. I really do.
So in terms of a different offer from Maryland, because there's a standing one, as far as I'm aware, that hasn't changed, right?
Which is the $400 million to build around the
stadium in the same spot.
I'll disagree with the last part. I get his sentiment, which is this is the only option, because it's the only one this good.
Because I think it is, yeah.
It's the best option. But I just think it's categorically inaccurate to say it's the only option when Maryland really, really wants them, and to your point, has already put their money where their mouth is. It feels like in a couple of months they could get it done in Maryland if they needed to. Now, maybe his point is the ceiling of that stadium is a 6, the ceiling of this one's a 10, and if the gap is that big, then this is your only option. But I just disagree. I think they could absolutely end up right back in Maryland with a brand-new state-of-the-art stadium, and while people will be frustrated that wanted it to be in D.C., there's some value to that, too, in terms of tailgating and the real estate around there, the size for the footprint, all the things you could do.
Yeah, if the point is I've got money in my pocket, plenty of it, and I'm in a Mercedes dealership, and I'm telling the guy, hey, I got a used 2013 Kia with 300,000 miles in another lot that I'm thinking about buying. If the point is there's no comparison, you're right. There's no comparison. That's what they want. I mean, and they've told us that. I mean, they've told the world that in terms of it's got to be at the RFK site.
Coming up in a half hour, which Commanders got the most to prove in 2025? Next, though, Saturday night, a stalwart for the Defenders who helped them win a championship, the MVP of the UFL title game, Jordan Ta'amu on Grant and Danny.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.